And we're good. So thank you for finally meeting with me.
It's been a lot of trial and error
for this.
Yeah, it's been a, I don't know, it's been how many months now you've been trying to get me to do this?
Since TKO, pretty much. Like right after.
So. Yeah.
You're busy.
Yeah.
And then when you're not busy, I'm like out doing something. So.
Yeah, it's hard to get the schedules to line up. And then today's snowing out, so there's not a whole lot to be done. So it's a perfect day.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited. So let's just jump into it. So tell us, how did you get started with riding? And what kind of bike were you on?
Just started with riding or started with hard enduro? Because that's a whole nother.
Riding first. Okay. Start at the beginning.
Okay. Well, I've probably been on a dirt bike since I was, I don't really know the exact age, but probably 5 years old. We started off on a Z50. So we, me and my brother, we wore the like two sets of tires off that Z50. And that was like our all time, everything bike, which we weren't supposed to jump or race or anything like that. But of course, kids will be kids. We did. But and so that was that. And then my dad was like, well, if you want a different bike, you're going to have to save for it. So from that point, I did a lot of chores, a lot of this, a lot of that. And I bought a horse and I sold the horse and I bought my own 50. So then I was through the moon because it had the new shrouds, I guess, not unlike the old white Z50 and stuff. And then from there, I just slowly progressed selling that bike, fixed a different one, worked my way up till I got to where I could get a decent sized bike and ride it. But I didn't really start racing until I'm trying to think the exact year. I want to say 2020 is like when I first got into actually racing. But prior to that, I watched Jarvis when I was like probably 12 years old on TV. We didn't have a lot of channels, so we happened to see the Red Bull event of, I think it was Romaniacs, and Jarvis had won, I think, that year. And from that point forward, I was like, oh, I would love to do that. I would love to do that. And at the time, I had a 150R Honda, and I tried to set that up for hard enduro, which is not really a hard enduro bike, but I trained what I could with a 150R for several years, and that's kind of how that went. And so then I didn't really have, then a couple of years I had to take off from riding because it just, life kind of got in the way. And then trying to see how I got, where did I go from there? So I think it was 2019. I finally had got another dirt bike, which I had ridden in between here and there quite a bit. I mean, not quite a bit, but on and off, I would get a dirt bike and ride some, but I never really like put in a lot of time with it. And then I think it was 2019. I went with some of my friends to an off-road park, and we went down there. And then I met this one guy, and I kind of got hooked in with him. And I never really rode with him much, just at that off-road park. And then he invited me to go down to a place called Briary Creek, Kentucky. So I went there and rode with him, and this was, I had started hair scrambles, I think, at that, or no, I didn't start hair scrambles yet, but I went down there to ride with him, and then I got introduced to the goon climbers, the hill climb guys. So from that point, I was all about climbing hills. I was all these guys all had extended bikes, but I was just stock length trying to do everything they were doing on a stock length 250 KTM at the time. It was a two stroke. And I was actually keeping up with them pretty good for most part. There was not much they climbed that I didn't. So I kind of got a little name there from doing that. And then I started racing some hair scrambles, which my first hair scramble I think I ever went to, I got partway into the lap, which I had an older KTM. I'm jumping all over my story here, but I got started and I didn't even get halfway into a lap and my kickstart fell off. And everybody kind of calls me a big sender when I'm riding. So I think I got a little bit of that from hill climbing for the hill climb guys. I was on a stock length bike, just basically stock dirt bike, and they were all on studded tire, this and that. And I would try to do everything they would do on my stock length bike. So it kind of made me a big sender, I guess, in a way, because I was trying to keep up with these other guys that have a lot bigger bikes than I did at the time. So I think it did help my hard enduro mindset too, because I see a line or something and then I just kind of send it and go for it, I guess. I'm kind of known for that, I guess, a little bit. But yeah, so I went down there and I was down there almost every weekend riding down there hill climbing. And then I did some hair scrambles and some of those went good and some of those did not went not very good. But I'm more of a technical rider, so hair scrambles are not my favorite thing. I do them to try to keep my speed, try to learn more speed, but I'm more of a technical rider. So when I did the hair scrambles, I would be like, man, I'd always catch up to everybody when it got kind of technical. And I'm like, man, I should almost do hard enduros. I should almost do hard enduro roofs. But I never really knew how to even get to hard enduro or everything, because I never really did much racing. I did only a handful of hair scrambles. So then the Goon Climbers invited me to go to a closer, a Perry State Forest closer. So at that point, I went there and I met Chris Davis, the Hocking Hills bike rental, and he was at the hill climb thing, and we kind of rode together a little bit there. And I didn't really, I know that I was like, man, he does pretty good, whatever not. And then that closed, and I hadn't seen him all winter. So I continued to ride with the hill climb guys all winter, big sending all these hills and stuff. And then the opener of Perry State Forest, I come back and I was on a 354 stroke, I think, at that time. And I was hill climbing, and then I met Chris Davis there again. So he was like, well, I'm going to go ride the single track and this and that. And I was there with the hill climb guys. I said, I would like to come ride some single track with you, because I like riding the single track stuff. So he's like, oh yeah, come on, let's go. And I was riding with him, and my bike kept overheating because the four strokes and the 350 just was not really great for tight single track. So I kept riding and it kept overheating and overheating. He's like, oh, you ride pretty good. But he goes, that four stroke just kind of sucks. And I'm like, I said, I'm going to buy a two stroke. Just mark my words. I will buy a two stroke, 300. He's like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He goes, sure, whatever, whatever. And I said, no, I'm going to buy one. Just give me some time. And he's like, oh yeah. Well, I went home and I advertised that 350. I was like, I'm getting a freaking two stroke 300, because I was like, so then probably 2 or 3 weeks later, I sold that. And then a couple weeks after that, I got my first 300 two stroke, which was a 2017 KTM 300. And I I called up Chris and said, hey, man, I got my two-stroke. I want to come ride. He's like, okay. He said, we got some guys coming in from Australia to ride. And then he goes, we're going to have a little like hard enduro training thing. He said, come on out. So I came up there. I rode with him that day. And like, I was kind of new to actual hard enduro riding. I had played around in my yard and stuff, which, I mean, I kind of practiced a little bit of log jumping and this and that, but nothing crazy. And he was like, oh, this is hard enduro. It was like taking me in these rock gardens and stuff. And I was just kind of blown away at that point. So then he said, well, you ought to come to the U.S. Hard Enduro this weekend, which was the one in Ohio. It was Fallen Timbers that year. That would have been, trying to think, was that 20? That would have been 2022.
Okay.
Or 2023. That might have been 2023. I'm not sure. Anyways, so I was like, I don't know. I never done nothing like that. I was like, I was like on the fence about going to it. And then finally I was like, last minute, I said, I'm throwing my bike in the truck and I'm going to race this hard enduro. So I jumped in the truck, threw all my stuff on, or put all my stuff in there, went up there. And for my first hard enduro, I didn't know what I'm getting into. As far as I've ever done was hair scrambles. So I was just like kind of going into it blind here. And we got to the starting line. Well, qualifier, there was actually a qualifier on that one. I forgot. But the qualifier day, I was like, I did two laps and I qualified really good. I can't remember what it was for my first hard enduro kind of thing. And I did a pretty good qualifier. So I had a fifth row start, which I was pretty happy with for my first hard enduro. And it was nice and dry that day. And it was like, oh, like you had like 3 hours to do so many laps. And I did my two laps in like 2 hours or something, or a little under. So I was feeling pretty good. And then the next day, it literally just rained and rained and rained. If anybody knows anything about the Ohio races, when they rain, it just turned to absolute crap. Like, it just gets horrible. Well, I pulled in, like, everybody was getting stuck in their vans and everything. And, like, we pulled up to the starting line, and the rain literally, they had, like, a delay, kind of like TKO had. And we sat there for like 45 minutes in the starting line getting drenched. I mean, just flat out drenched. And I am like, holy crap. We're all freezing cold. Take off. Go to the first, just very gradual downhill. And everybody's off their bikes, like walking their bikes down these hills, piling up into each other. Just, it was a mess. And I'm like, holy crap, what did I get myself into? These guys are crazy doing these hard enduros. And I kept pushing on, like got about halfway through that race. And I met back, Chris Davis caught up to me, and me and him kind of helped each other through the rest of that race. Well, not the rest of it. Through quite a ways of it. And then we got to this one hill, and I was usually pretty good at hills, but it was so muddy. I was there for probably 30 minutes trying to make this one hill. Like, and everybody knows that hill that I'm talking about, probably, if they know the Fallen Timbers of that year. Yeah. Even like Nick Farringer and a lot of those guys were struggling on this hill. So, and Chris Davis, he had somebody else, and they pulled each other to the top. And I was down there hitting it. My bike was flipping down this hill. And, like, your bike weighs so much when it's that muddy. Like, there's 40 pounds of mud on your bike. So it just kept wearing me down. I said, I got, like, three more hits in me to make this hill. And if I don't make it, I'm going to quit. And I think after, like, the second more hit, after I said that, I made it. So I was like, well, I'm going to try to finish a lap, man. So I kept pushing on, caught back up to Chris. Got by him, and then, like, I kept pushing and pushing and finally got to this one spot almost to the finish. And I was like, if I don't make it up this lift, I don't even physically have the strength to pick my bike back up. Like, that was how tired I was. Like, because it was a 5-hour race, I believe it was. So I was like, I literally don't even have the strength to stand up if I fall down. And I got up that bank, got through the finish line, like, and I just laid on the ground there. And I was like, this is crazy crap, hard enduros. And I was racing B class at the time. And I think that race, I might have got third. So that was my first hard enduro. And I was in B class at that time. And I got third. And I was pretty happy about that, because, like, going from a first hard enduro, never even been in the world of that, and then jumping in and getting that. So I was pretty ecstatic about that. So then, trying to think, after that, I started riding with Chris Davis, doing strictly hard enduro after that, pretty much. And LTKO. And, well, there was, I had to miss the, what the heck is the Pennsylvania race? Oh, and I Roar. Missed that. Then I went to, Tough Like Roar. I don't know when mine went blank. But, so then I went to TKO. That was technically my second hard enduro would have been TKO that year. And I raced it. It was super hot. I was so freaking nervous there, like, because it was such a big event, and I was just, like, every race, I was just extremely nervous. And I actually made it to Sunday on my first year of going, my second hard enduro, first year of hard enduro. And so I was pretty happy about that. I ended up, I think, second in B class down there at TKO. For my second hard enduro, I was, like, stupid ecstatic about that. So from that point, Chris Davis goes, well, if you want to race for me, he is, but you're going to have to go to A class. I was like, well, crap. Because I was like, I kind of wanted to sandbag a little bit. But So I signed up for A class, and then we raced, I'm trying to remember, I raced the entire fall series of that year, which ended in Arkansas, and I was top three, I think, at every race. I can't remember which races was what, and then I ended up winning the fall series in points. So that was kind of basically my first year of hard enduro, so I was pretty happy about that for my first year of hard enduro. And that was actually been 2023, because, yeah, then we came into this year and it just all fell apart. No, not totally, but I raced Battle of the Goats for the first time this year, and I blew out my clutch cover on Chicken Fight Hill, like 30 minutes, or that's not even 30 minutes into the race, and it took me 30 minutes to get it all changed out and everything and get back on the course. So by that time I was behind C class, everything. So that was just really hard, because I spent the whole race, entire race, doing playing catch up there. And I got right before the finish, and I got to this one spot, and I sat there for probably 30 minutes, and I could not get out of this little ravine. And I finally had to end my race there after 5 hours of racing. And I talked to a lot of the other class, and they said they had help getting out of that ravine. So by the time I got there, though, my whole class had already went through, because I had the 30 minutes of trying to get my stuff fixed. But then I'm trying to think where we went after that. And then Virginia, this year just didn't seem to quite go the way I planned. Like, Virginia, I had missed a turn So that I was racing really good. I was racing right up near the front, and then I missed a turn. And that cost me a 30-minute penalty at Virginia. And then something came up, and I had family members pass, so I had to miss Roar again this year. And then I think was TKO after Roar. So then I got to Roar, or I missed Roar, went to TKO this year. And TKO was a lot harder this year, in my opinion, as far as the field, because there was a lot more good riders, I think, at TKO this year than years prior. So I don't remember what I ended up there, 47th overall, I think, out of everybody, which is not great, but it's something. And then I was being stupid, and I was trying to fly a paramotor thing, and I crashed and broke my hand. So that pretty much threw me all the way out until this last race in Ohio came, and I was able to get on the bike and race that last race, but I wasn't quite up to 100% there. And then I had a little mishap, crashed into a tree and messed up my clutch lever. And so then I spent the whole rest of that race trying to play catch up too. So this year just didn't quite pan out like last year, but it's like this coming year's plans are supposed to be, I'm going to put in a lot of time and try to make it come together a little better for sure. So that's kind of pretty much how I got into hard enduro, I guess. But yeah, growing up, we were never really allowed to race or jump a dirt bike or anything. So like going from that and into the racing world and stuff, it's a whole experience. Yeah. Like we weren't even allowed to. Yeah. Like we would get grounded if we like were jumping our dirt bikes. So yeah. And we went in, and then from that going into racing all over the country is kind of different. But yeah.
Yeah. So you've been mostly on the East Coast. Yeah. What's your favorite race out there?
On the East Coast? That's pretty tough. I like Battle of the Goats because it has like, to me, I haven't got to go to Roar yet because 2 years in a row, it just didn't work out with life. But to me, Battle of the Goats was a really more of an actual hard enduro, in my opinion. But Virginia is a very fun course to ride. So it's probably a toss-up between the two of them. Arkansas was really fun, too. So I don't know. I forgot about Arkansas. Probably Arkansas would have been my funnest because it was nothing but rocks, and I really love the rocks. So rocks are kind of my specialty, so I really liked Arkansas. But yeah,
rocks which and that's kind of
rocks and hill climbs. That's my thing. The wide open single track is not my thing. That's where I usually lose time. So I usually pass a lot of people back in the rocks, and then it's kind of battle of that. So if there's more technical, normally I excel than if there's more wide open. Like, so that's kind of how mine goes.
Yeah.
Normally.
So how long have you had the trials bike?
The trials
bike. And how has the trials bike played into all of this?
The trials bike is I've had it for probably right after I met Chris Davis, so that would have been 2 years, going on 2 years now, and it's played quite a big difference in my riding for sure, I would say, because 99% of the time, like where I'm living right now, it's there's not much riding, so but we have like 3 acres here, and I mess around on 3 acres with my trials bike on a pretty regular basis. So, and everything on your trials bike is just translates right over to a dirt bike. So, I mean, I always try to tell everybody, if you have limited riding area, get you a trials bike and just play around in your backyard. Like, you can have literally hardly no, I mean, just a little bit of ground, and you can learn so much on a trials bike. And it makes everything you do wrong seem to be more vivid on a trials bike than it would be if you're on a dirt bike. Like, in your dirt bike, you're like, what did I do wrong? Why didn't I get up over that log or whatever? On a trials bike, it's like, oh, it's because I didn't throw my hips forward, or it's because I didn't do that or whatever. So I definitely try to have recommend everybody to get one if you don't have like a lot of riding area. Yeah. But yeah, it's just an old trials bike.
I definitely enjoyed my time when I was on one. Yeah.
How long did you ride one?
Oh, it was only one day. I only had
only one day.
I went out and I rode with my friend. She does a lot of trial stuff. So she let me borrow her bike because my bike was having clutch issues. So we had to fix that.
I just rode mine last weekend with a big group of dirt bikes, and I was climbing everything they was on it, and they were pretty shocked. But yeah, I try to ride it as much as I can. And also, it helps you get that mental note of keeping your feet on the pegs, because you pretty much have to. You can't sit down and drag your feet along, so it's kind of automatically gets you that mental note of, well, I have to stand and put pressure to the wheel and whatever not. So that's another big reason I tell a lot of people that are trying to get into hard enduro, ride a trials bike, because it will make you stand. Like, and in my opinion, standing is a huge deal in hard enduro. Like, if you can get comfortable standing by putting your foot on an obstacle and be standing on the peg and whatever not, it makes a huge difference in a hard enduro situation to have your feet on the pegs. Mm-hmm. But
good to know. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get a whole lot of time to put my feet down. If I try and put my foot down, usually that results in me falling. So I've gotten better about keeping my feet on the pegs and just not even trying to dab.
Yeah. That's another thing I'm trying to help a lot of people, because a lot of people try to take my advice and this and that, and I'll try to tell them something, but I don't realize like how tall I am, because I'm like 6'5", 6'4", 6'5", somewhere in there, and I can literally stand behind my bike and like move it around, you know, be standing behind my back fender, and a lot of these people are like, I'm trying to give them advice, I'm like, just put your foot here, and they're like, I can't touch the ground. And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot, and then you have to ride a little different here, it's not the same. So I have a hard, I try to remember that when I'm trying to help people like get through obstacles and stuff. But yeah, you just like try to find a place to plant your foot though, like on a rock, if you're in a technical set, like look ahead and find, like, imagine where you're going to put your foot next. If you're not a tall rider, like, try to think about like, oh, I'm going to get my front tire here and my foot's going to land there or whatever not. Cause I know it's something that a lot of shorter riders struggle with, is they get their bike to there and then there's like nowhere to put their foot. So like, you have to try to like look out ahead and see where, plan it out. You almost like plan everything you do out ahead of time. Like, you have to be able to see what's going on, like see what's going to happen before it happens almost. Not always is a workout in the way you plan in your mind, but trust me, I know that. But yeah, in my mind, it's like, oh, I'm gonna send this rock and go around everybody, and it doesn't usually work out, but sometimes it does, and that's kind of how I get the name for the big fender, because sometimes it does work, and I look like a pro rider, but and then other times it's like, oh, look at that idiot. He just splattered into a big rock and fell off of it.
We did with, what was it, American Hard Enduro at Wind Rock, and they posted a video of you like going up that crazy line. That was insane. And I was like, what is he doing right now?
That was, I looked at it and they said, well, they took me to the top of that mountain and they were like, well, we have a rock up here, but we've never seen anybody like get up on it. Well, they said they wanted me to jump off of it. So I went on the backside, and it's like probably a 3 foot splat. Like you have to like splat into it to get up onto it, maybe a little higher even. So I got up on it, jumped off of it, and they're like, oh my goodness, they were so happy. And I was like, I think I can go up it, like that big slab. And they're like, there's no way you can go up that. I'm like, yeah, I think I can get up it. Well, I had to sit there and like psych myself out. And like somehow when I'm riding, like when I go to do something, like I just like my brain shuts off and I just like go for it. I don't know. And that's got me into some pretty bad spots before, but it's also got me up some pretty bad spots before. So I looked at it and I kept rolling up to it. And finally I was like, you know what? I think I can make it. And the first time I did it, I'm trying to remember, I chickened out a little bit. I got all the way to the top and it was like, and I slid my bike back down off and I just immediately jumped back up and I'm like, nope, I can make this now. Like I kind of felt it out and I was like, jump back up, rode back down the hill, come at it again. And then I got my bike up on her. And if I would have like halfway chickened out again, but I got my bike up on there, then I just crawled up behind it. But I probably would have been like trying to use my own advice and stayed on the pegs. I probably would have went right up it, but I did get up it, but it wasn't 100% clean. But the videos do no justice to that rock though, because it's really sketchy, like really, really sketchy. Because if you go off to the right, it was like a 10-foot drop. So it was definitely
that's sketchy.
Huh? And that's nothing. Yeah. I did a hill down in Kentucky when I was riding with the hill climb guys, and I thought I broke my ribs that day because it's just like so steep at the bottom and only extended bikes I've ever climbed it. And I was kind of at that point, I was doing pretty good. So I was like, I kind of had myself maybe a little more built up than I could ride. And I tried this one hill and I got up almost to the top and then didn't make it. And that's another thing I'm known for, is like not let my bike go. They're like, you never let go of your bike. Like people will let their bikes slip down a hill and I'm like, no, I gotta pay for this thing. Like I'm gonna hold on to it for dear life. And I held on to it and it yanked me off the hill. So then I had like a 15-foot drop to my rib cage, and I was gasping for air. And I'm pretty sure I fractured the ribs that day, but I never went and got it checked out, but it's healed up fine now. But yeah, that's why I said sometimes it does get me into some situations being a big sender, but it also gets you a name too. So you take the good and the bad.
Well, I'm currently known as the girl who fell down the mountain out here. So
I get it. How exactly did that go down? You just front tire wash or?
There was this huge rock and I knew I was going to hit it and it was like embedded, but when I hit it, it knocked the rock loose. So when my back tire hit it, it just slid out. And so I went down the mountain. So
I see. Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
How far did you go?
I was like my bike, like 30-ish feet.
Wow. That's a pretty good fall.
Yeah. The GoPro like got ripped off of my helmet and like, but the bike went over me at one point because it like smashed into my chest and I was like, I'm so glad I'm wearing a chest protector because that could have been really bad.
Yeah. I never really wear a chest protector. But, yeah,
I fall too much to not. But a guy, I guess, went off of it last year and broke his ribs, like, in the exact same spot. It's like, there's a sign right there that has his name on it because that's where he went off. And I was like, yeah, maybe this is a bad spot, you guys.
Sounds like it's a pretty bad spot if there's been multiple people going off of that spot. Or maybe you guys are just making the new line.
Yeah, the dude... Yeah. No, there's like, that's the thing. It's like super skinny single track right there, like on the
Nice.
side. And that is the only spot where it's actually like a cliff like drop off. The rest of it is like there's like a gradual like drop to it. So anywhere else you can make that mistake and it's totally fine. It is only in that like 10-foot section that it is just a complete drop off.
It
So
feels like
yeah,
you
I'm
should be
just
extra
lucky, I
careful in that
guess.
10-foot section.
I had never been there before, so I didn't know. And I would have been fine had that rock not moved. So like I didn't like looking back at the footage and everything, the guy who's behind me, like there wasn't anything I could have done different to prevent that, which sucks because like that's scary. But like it wasn't my mistake. And I don't know if that
I
makes it
see.
better or worse.
Maybe. I don't know. You think you could have seen a rock or seen it ahead of time if you'd have been paying attention, maybe, or not?
I mean, I saw it. I knew I was going to hit it. And I was totally fine with being able to hit it. But when it came loose was the thing. And it was like this
Oh,
big. It was gigantic.
I
So,
got you.
like, it wasn't a rock that I anticipated like coming out of the
Yeah,
ground.
I
So,
understand.
yeah.
Yeah, I did something similar to that in TKO the first year I was there. I was coming down one of the fire roads at TKO, and I every lap I kept seeing this one rock, and I was like, I'd go around it, and I'd lose a little bit of speed. I'd lose a little bit of speed, and every time I go around it, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna just hit that rock on the next lap, and I've come down through there in the next lap, like third gear, and hit that rock, and it did pretty much exactly what you said too. It just whoosh, my front tire went out, and I'm going like 40 mile an hour
Amazing.
at this point. And off the fire road, I went down through the weeds. Like, I literally was rolling through the trees. I don't know how I didn't hit a tree, like, tumbling end over end through the woods. And was like, whoa, I shouldn't have hit that rock, I guess. And then jumped back up, ran up to my bike. And then at that point, my bars were like twisted down, so I rode the last 2 miles of TKO with like hand completely 90 degrees, my bars. But yeah, so I guess I can kind of relate to that a little bit.
Yeah, and it's sometimes you just, you think the rock is going to stay planted and then it doesn't. So.
Yeah, I just have to be prepared for that next time. Every rock can
Yeah.
move.
Well, and I've never done single track like on an exposed like hillside like that before. So I was like a
I
little
see.
bit nervous at first and then I was actually starting to feel really good about it. And they had said that like we were close to the end. So I was like, okay, cool.
Getting
And
a little
then like
overconfident.
I was just like, I might have, because I might have been going a little fast. So the group that I was with was like an A class group. And I'm
I
definitely not
see.
an A rider. So like I was feeling really good. And then that happened and I didn't feel so good anymore.
Shoot. Yeah. I was trying to, I lost my train of thought. I was going to say something to that, but dang it. No, I can't remember.
Just be brave.
No. I mean, obviously that too, but
Thanks. Thank you.
no, I forgot what I was going to say to that. Dang it. I lost my train of thought.
That's fine. Let's go back to you and your riding stuff. So, like, when you started riding or at any point, have you done like any formal training clinics, anything like that? Have you taken any of those?
I actually have not taken any clinics. I used to watch a YouTube video or a YouTube channel that was I think it was like Gumby Riders or something. There were some older dudes from Australia, and I would watch a lot of those and just got out here on my 150R and like try to figure out how to hit a log. And I would spend hours out there at that point because when I was on my 150R, I didn't have to go to work or anything, so it
Yeah.
was just I would just go outside and just spend hours on my bike. And I would practice pivot turns and clutch control and this and that. And I was really obsessed with stoppies for a while. So there was a lot of going over the bars that never really turned into a good stoppie, just a lot of going over the bars. But no, I never really did much clinicals or clinics and anything like that. I just, I think I mostly just practiced by myself. And then we're like, I think I just practiced by myself so much, I got really good, and I didn't realize how, like, I didn't realize that I'd gotten good until I went out and rode with other people. And they're like, holy crap, dude, like, you need to be racing. Like, you need to be, like, you're really good at what you're doing. And I'm like, I didn't know. I just rode with myself all the time. So I just assumed that, like, everybody rode the same, you know. But, yeah, I think mostly just being out there, and you can learn more. What I've discovered is you can learn more in an hour a day, just honing, like, working on a specific skill each day, than you can going on a 6-hour trail ride with a bunch of buddies. Like, you'll learn stuff going on a big trail ride, but, or even a hard enduro ride, but, like, if you actually spend time trying to, like, nitpick yourself and see how your feet need to stand on the pegs, and just however, anything like that, your body positioning, if you spend time just actually honing on that stuff, you'll get a lot better just by doing that, rather than just going on a big ride, which that's not the funnest thing to do. But if you got a couple guys that like to kind of sit there and pick at each other and say, oh, I think you've done this wrong, or try this, I think you can gain a lot of more skill by doing that than to just go out and ride. But going out and ride, it's good to go out and ride too, because it kind of develops, like, makes you push a little bit too if you go out and ride with a big group of people, because you're like, you don't want to be the slowest one. You want to try to outdo everybody or whatever, which I guess I do. I always try to outdo everybody, whether that's just me. there's no reason to, but, like, normally when I go ride, they're like, there's a sketchy line. Hey, John, go hit that. And it's like, okay. So I'm kind of the new line tester or whatever. But I don't mind being that. I try to push myself, I guess, all the time. I'm always trying to go outside my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. If you just stay in your comfort zone, it's going to be hard to really gain forward. So I'm always just, and that's kind of part of being a big sender too, is just, it's not really comfortable to be a big center, but a lot of times you'd be surprised if you hit something that you'll actually make it. I mean, not always, but, like, there's a lot of times you'll be like, holy crap, I wouldn't have thought I could have made that. And then when you actually do it, and it actually works out. And then from that point on, you're like, that's basically a new skill in your tool bag. It's like, oh, I can do that now. I didn't realize I could. But that kind of comes from being a sender a little bit. I'm not trying to tell everybody to go out here and just send everything, but, like, you could, a lot of times, I think you'll surprise yourself what you can do if you just actually go for it. But no, I never really,
I find that when I
go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's a little bit of delay.
I was gonna say I find that when I really commit to something, whether or not I'm really 100% sure I have the skill to do it, it usually works out. But if I hesitate, then I screw it up. I just have to go for it. So, like, I was telling my friend this the other day, like, if I'm out on a trail ride, because of my skill level, and I completely get it, people tend to stop right before an obstacle, like right in front of a big rock to get up, and they will stop and they want to talk to me about what line to go up it. And I'm like, I get that. But, like, at the same time, if I stop, it takes me a second to get back on my bike. And, like, and then, like, if I just go 90% of the time, I can just figure it out as I go through it. And, I kind of understand that, because I feel like sometimes I do that, but I've also, I don't know. I look at lines really weird, apparently. Like, I had a couple of friends tell me that, like, that were behind me these last few weeks. And they're like, dude, you picked the craziest line to go through that. Like, it was not the easy line. I'm like, the easy line was right next to the cliff. So I would rather go over the big rock that I know it's going to take a little bit more to get over. But, like, that to me is the better line. So,
yeah, that's probably from past trauma from tumbling down hills.
It was before that, okay?
No, that's another thing that I've noticed too, that a lot of people like getting into hard enduro is you'd be surprised that the bigger lines sometimes are actually easier. Like, not like everybody gets scared to ride the tops of the, like, the big rocks and stuff, but 9 times out of 10 if you ride on top mm-hmm. the rocks, it's a lot smoother ride than trying to push your bike between the cracks of the rocks. So that's something I've been really kind of figuring out in the last while by riding. It helps if you can ride with better riders than you are or whatever, because that helps push you a little bit. But I've noticed that if you ride like the tops of the big rocks, and a lot of times it's a lot smoother and less, you're less likely to get pinched and stuck and be off your bike pushing, because hard enduro is all about saving energy and like not having to push your bike. Because if you have to push your bike, that's just that much more energy you have to. And the more energy you can have, the faster you can ride. And you want to really save your energy. So riding the tops of the rock kind of helps keep you from pushing. And another thing too, it seems like if there seems like there's always traction, you just have to change the way you're, whatever you're doing. If you're in a tight spot and you're stuck and you're not getting traction, look around, move your back tire a little bit, do something body positioning, but usually there's traction. If you just gotta have to, there's no like just sitting there revving your bike and spinning the tire is not really going to get you anywhere. Like, there's, you have to change something. And a lot of times, 9 times out of 10 in a technical spot, a lot of people rev their bike, and I'm not saying I've never done it either. Like, US Hard Enduro posted a video of me looping my bike out from revving it and smashing my elbow and everything else. But I've learned since then, though, like, usually like half throttle on a lot of obstacles and just finding the traction and like being more paying attention to more traction than actually throttle. Like, and yeah, ride the tops of the rocks. Like, if you're going to pull up to a big rock garden, like, a lot of times you can ride on top of the rocks, especially if it's not on a hillside. If it's on a hillside, you kind of just got to wedge yourself in there and work your way up it. But if it's pretty fairly flat or, you know, slightly sloped rock garden, like, ride the tops of the rocks. It's usually way better than to ride in the cracks. But it's that's the thing. Like, a lot of people, like, I think that's where it helps me, because I'm kind of the big sender guy, is that, like, I guess I don't get scared to ride the tops of the rocks, and it helps me in the technical stuff, where a lot of people are scared to ride the tops of the rocks, and they're like, they'll take the other smaller line, and then it actually makes them go slower. But yeah.
No, that's good to know. I haven't done a ton of rock gardens necessarily, but yeah, I definitely don't like getting stuck like in the cracks between everything, and then like,
yeah,
it's just super awkward.
Yeah, and people will just, they, you can burn so much energy if you get stuck down between the rocks too. It's mm-hmm. unreal. Like, and I'm guilty of it too in the past, just burning up so much energy, and then it pretty much ruins the rest of your race if you burn yourself out just trying to push through the rocks and not just trying to ride, I guess, ride smarter and just be more technical with your riding instead of just pushing and bulldozing your way through the rocks. Like, you can get through them either way, but you're just going to be gassed by the time you get done with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally get that. So talking about, like, you know, that your fitness has to be kind of a little bit better for hard enduro. I mean, I don't think you can be really unfit and do hard enduro. You have to be able to pick up your bike and do all the stuff. So, what do you do for like fitness and nutrition?
Nutrition, I'm not very good at that. I mean, I try to eat pretty healthy for the most part. Like, and I try to eat like my three solid meals a day, and I try to eat a pretty hearty breakfast most of the time, which I'm a pretty skinny person. I think I have a very high metabolism so that I can pretty much eat a lot. But I do do some running, so I'm just jogging or whatever not. So that, to me, jogging helps tremendously in hard enduro because it just gets your lungs like, and your physical stamina. Like, stamina is the main thing I feel like with hard enduro as far as, like, I mean, some people, I guess, if you're struggling to pick up your bike, you're going to want to work on your arms and stuff. But for me, my biggest struggle with hard enduro is just the physical stamina of, like, being able to keep that high pace. Because once you get up to top of A class and beyond, you do a 5-hour race, and it's pretty much constant 5-hour race. You're not stopping and taking breaks and stuff like some of the other classes do. You're pretty much like, if you want to be the top of that class, you're going to have to pretty much be on a pretty steady roll for the 5 hours or whatever your race is. So to me, stamina is a huge thing, and endurance. Like, so I do some running, jogging. I don't do a lot, but like 2 to 3 miles at a time. A lot of times if I do. And then I do work outside, and I do carpentry work. So I think that helps with my arms and everything, because I'm constantly climbing. I'm always like basically almost doing chin-ups, because you climb up and down a building and whatever, not in ladders all day and whatever. So that kind of, I think that gets my arms a little better for hard enduro. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think you necessarily have to be like super, super fit in hard enduro, but as long as you have endurance and you have basically the strength to pick up your bike, you'll be pretty good. And of course, height helps too, but
some of us can't help it with the height thing, you know?
Yeah. Which I don't know. I've never really rode much of the, I mean, I've rode lowered bikes. So that's the only thing I can really say for people that are struggling with the short stuff or for the short problem. But, yeah. But I think, yeah, cardio is a huge thing of hard enduro. So if you can just do a lot of cardio and stuff, that kind of stuff helps with hard enduro more than like going out into the gym and getting buff and big. I don't think that's really going to benefit you as much as the cardio would.
Okay.
But,
and then the other side of that is like, so when you're out in a race and you're kind of like challenged, whether it's, you know, you had your bike issues or whatever, you come to a section that you don't make it the first try. So these are different things that you have to overcome. Like, how do you keep a good like mindset, or like, how do you push through in situations like that? Like, what keeps you going?
Well, I think I'm just a very kind of a naturally competitive person. So I feel like I don't really have a lot of quit in me, but yeah, I think the main thing, like, I always tell myself, if I get to an obstacle and I'm like very struggling with it, I just tell myself I'm going to get up. It's just a matter of how long. Like, I just put that in my mind. I was like, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to get up this obstacle. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take me. Like, you just don't have that I can't do this attitude into the thing. You just got to be like, okay, I got to figure this out. It's like a puzzle. Like, how am I going to get, you can't just say, oh, it looks too bad or whatever. I think I just, in my mind, it's like, I just say, you know what, I'm going to get up it no matter what it is, how hard it is, whatever not, I'll find a way up, but it might take me a little longer. So yeah, you just have to be in that mindset of that. Don't ever let it cross through your mind that, well, maybe I'm just gonna, no, I can't do this. Don't let that cross your mind. Like, you can, not anybody could finish a hard enduro, almost any hard enduro. It's just a matter of how long it takes you. So I mean, of course, it might take somebody 24 hours to finish a hard enduro that somebody might do in four, but it's still like, just keep that in your mind. Like, you can do it. You just got to keep that positive mindset that it's just going to, it's just a matter of how long it's going to take me. Not if I can or can't do it. But I mean, of course, you can always get help from another racer or something like that too. But I try, and being very competitive kind of helps too. So, cause that gives me a little more, incentive to try to hit something more than once too. Cause I like a lot of times I'm fairly close to the front if I'm not running in the front. So I am like, oh, there's that person. If you can kind of keep somebody that you're right, it helps if you have somebody like that you're trying to kind of racing against or battling it out with or whatever. So if you guys can kind of battle that out, it really helps keep you going and give you that ambition to try to get up through something. And especially if they're behind you, you're really like going to be pushing hard to get up it. But, or if they're just right in front of you, you're going to try to take a crazy line to get around them or whatever you got to do to get, or push a little harder to try to get past them and then so on. So that's, because normally, if you're really competitive, it's going to help you a lot.
We met at CKO. Mm-hmm. There was this really awesome, what was it, like a 2-hour delay. How much did that mess with your mindset going into the race?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, I think it did kind of bother me a little bit, but because I think I was kind of like, I kind of get in my zone and like I was in the practice area and I was just kind of all amped up and just like ready to pull up to the line and go. So as far as arm pump goes, I feel like it could have probably affected me a little bit. As far as mindset goes, I'm not sure. Like, I don't think it bothered me terribly, but the food aspect was definitely getting to me a little bit because I was kind of hungry. Because I normally, before a race, I can't really eat. I try to force myself to eat, and I can't really eat. So the food aspect was definitely getting to me. And then, the arm pump, I think, probably was a little worse because of that 2-hour delay. But I don't feel like it overly messed with my riding skill level. I mean, I think that was... I mean, it usually takes me, I want to say probably 20 minutes into the race before I really get into my zone. So like, I don't think it really matters how my start goes. Like, but once I get into the race about 20 minutes or something, give or take a little, I really start getting into my flow, I guess. So, and on a hard enduro, for the most part, 20 minutes, like you have a 4-hour race, so it doesn't matter if it takes you 20 minutes to get going. But TKO is a little shorter race, so that does affect me some, because it takes me a while just to get, like, feel like where I'm riding at my best level. I would like to try to figure out how to kind of get to that point before I'm at the starting line, but, I don't know. I'm not sure how to do that. I need to practice ride more ahead of time or something before I get into a race.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if anybody would have any advice for you.
No, I have no idea.
I'm not a racer. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to a good bit of people that say, I don't really like get into my groove until I get out there a little bit. I think it's probably a lot to do with nerves and just being at more races. The more races you go to, probably the less nervous you are. Because I think once you get out there for about 20 minutes, you're like, okay. Yeah, I've talked to several other people, and that probably is a lot to do with nerves, that your nerves kind of take over a little bit at first and you're not riding at your best level. But once you're out there for like several minutes, 20 minutes, 10 minutes or whatever, you kind of get like, okay, I'm out here to do my job. Like, I'm out here to race. your mind kind of gets back into that zone. But mm-hmm. at first, you probably got a lot of adrenaline going and stuff, because it, you know, at the starting line, you're sitting there, you're like 10 seconds, your heart's racing, you know, it's hard to think quite straight, I think. So that's probably a lot to do with it. If you, the more races you're in and the more that you're around, the little bit calmer you'll be at the start line, and probably the smoother you'll be to start off with. But I would say, I mean, it's kind of how it seems like once you get out there, you're just like, okay, now it's time to go to work. Like, but yeah, I'm pretty excited to see how this next year comes.
Cool. Yeah, I am too. So do you want to talk about kind of what some of the differences are going into 2025, what you've got going on with your race program?
Well, I was 2024, I raced with Talking Hills Bike Rental on a Husqvarna 300. So this year I will be riding with Matt Adams and Champion Brick right here, whatever. That was the... yeah, so I'll be on the Matt Adams Champion Brick bike. So that's a pretty big change. It'll be interesting. He's currently building my bike right now, for setting it up for me. So I'm pretty excited to be out there with him and Tobin and Tucker and all them. So it'll be pretty interesting to see how 2025 goes with a different race team. And I feel like, yeah, if we I'll be pushing, we'll all be pushing each other out there too, because me and Tucker will be in the same class, so it's gonna be like a friendly team battle kind of thing or whatever. So I feel like that'll help a little bit. But yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I'm pretty stoked about it. We'll see how it goes, but yeah. Yeah, he's supposedly it's gonna be helping me out with quite a bit of stuff, so we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really awesome. That's great to see you getting that kind of support.
Yeah. Just trying to think. And Matt's pretty well known in the hard enduro, so it's pretty cool to be on his team, you know, racing for him. So it's just, yeah, it'll be cool. Yeah. Just be part of his whole thing. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but yeah, hopefully he doesn't fire me.
I highly doubt it. With Matt, so Matt's gone over to Romaniacs and done races like that. If you could pick any race to go to overseas and it was all paid for, which race would you pick to go to?
It would probably be the Romaniacs, or what is the one in the mind? What the heck is that called? What's the one in the mind? They start off in the mind. Erzberg Rodeo. It would be one of those two if I had to pick. I'm not sure. The Romania is just a long race, I feel like, because it's like a week event or something in it. So I'm not sure how that would go, but mm-hmm. I feel like Erzberg would be kind of right up my alley, because it's like a lot of rocks and technical stuff. So that would be a very pretty good toss up right there. But I almost think I would rather go to Erzberg, even though Romaniacs was like the first hard enduro I ever even seen on TV, and I seen Jarvis racing it. So that was kind of like always something I wanted to do, was the Erzberg. But and in like United States, or the, I would probably, one of the ones I really would like to do is either Grinding Stone or Donner. The Donner one just looked like a big mix of terrain. Like the Donner is, I probably would be Donner. I would rather do, because it's such a difference. Like, you start off at the bottom of the mountain and it might be warm, and then you get up to the top and it could be snowing. So that would be kind of interesting to do that much elevation change. But mm-hmm. yeah. What about you? What's your, okay.
cool.
pick of foreign races, I guess.
For like the world?
Yeah.
Or US?
Probably the world.
I don't know that I could race any of the ones in the world. If I had the skill, I think I would love to do Sea to Sky, just because that one's so epic. You start.
I forgot about Sea to Sky.
Way top of Mount Olympus, and it's just huge. And,
yeah, hey, I forgot about that one. Now you got me second guessing my Erzberg.
You can't take my answer. No, actually Erzberg would probably be my second. Erzberg was the first hard enduro that I ever watched, and that was probably like 10 years ago. And yeah, just that's pretty epic in and of itself, but it'd be really cool to go. That one supposedly has like a really crazy atmosphere around it, and just like a big party, but then it's also this really gnarly race, and it's just, you know, it's just like what people think of when they think of hard enduro. So I feel like it'd be really cool to go to that and kind of experience that. I'm hoping to go in 25, but we'll see. So
I see. Yeah,
not
the
to race, just to go.
Erzberg, they're hard enduro is like huge over there. So compared to America, Erzberg, I mean that area in the world is. Hard enduro is a lot bigger than it is in the U.S. now, right now, at this point. So, I think it would be, like you said, it would be kind of cool to go somewhere where they appreciate hard enduro to the extent that a lot of us hard enduro riders do. Because, there's not near as many people that even know about hard enduro in America compared to, like, all over the world. So, yeah, I can see where you're coming from there on that. I mean. But
I want to go ride everywhere, though. I'm ridiculous like that. Like I there's not races everywhere, but I would go ride everywhere. Like Jarvis has the signature tours, and they just opened up one in Colombia. They just advertised for Turkey again, and like he's got them all over the world, and I'm just like, I just need to do like a Jarvis world tour and just go to all of them.
There you go. You just really follow him around. Tell him to bring your bike with you. With him. Be his camera. Or your,
well,
be
you can rent an
interview person.
There, so each.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if it pans out. But I'm really hoping to get to one or two of the tours. If I do get overseas to get to Erzberg and Sea to Sky this year, I'd really like to hit a couple of those tours while I'm over there. So I think, since I'll be over there anyway, might as well, right?
Yeah, that's half the expenses getting over there. So if you're over there, you might as well get on the bike a little bit. Oh, I would definitely like to get over there and do some of those races at some point in life, but I'm not sure exactly when that'll be, but it would be definitely would be a dream to go over there and race some of those races. Just to see how different it is compared to like the United States and stuff, and like videos never do no justice. So like when you watch Erzberg on the TV, you're like, oh, I'd go right up that hill, and then like to see it in person would be like, oh, maybe I wouldn't go right up that hill.
I feel like I've talked to several people who've gone over there for different races. Matt's gone to Romaniacs, and then Dimitri's gone to Romaniacs and to Sea to Sky. And so it's kind of cool to hear their takes on those races and kind of how different it is. And, Matt was talking about how we both kind of wish that there was more opportunities for, like, even just the top riders don't have very much opportunity to go overseas and race over there. You know, even if you take the top 10 pros, they don't all have that opportunity. It's really, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, it was just Cody and Tristan that were going over to do those races.
Did Ryder not get to go over there?
Cool to see more people. I don't think so. But it'd be really cool to see some of those guys who are our top talent go over there and, you know, check it out. And they're going to bring all that experience back. And I think that would be really cool. So I'm hopeful that, like, as things go forward, maybe the economy gets better and then they can get some better contracts that can help them get over there and do that. The last couple things that I have for you was, you kind of already talked about this, but to sum it up in like 10 seconds of teaching, what would be your best advice for somebody who's brand new to dirt biking overall in general?
Brand new to dirt biking?
Yeah. What's your best advice for somebody who's just got a bike and their first time on it?
Let me think here. That's a good question. I would just say work on the fundamentals, like, of dirt bikes. I guess if you've never been on a dirt bike, just slowly build on the fundamentals and, like, work on your skills, like, as kind of like I mentioned earlier. But yeah, just like work on your basics. Don't try to go send everything, I guess, if you're not to that point yet. I would just try to get, like, I don't know, just your clutch control. That's a huge thing. Like, get that down. Just do little baby steps on that. Balance is a huge thing. So even prior to getting on dirt bike, if you have good balance, it's gonna help you. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, and don't use more than first gear for the while, because if you're like never been on a dirt bike, getting up to last gear, yeah, sometimes you can, you know, you could go pretty fast and whatever not and still be upright, but if you don't know how the bike's going to react or anything, if you're not used to it, and it could be dangerous. But
yeah,
just take things slow, I guess. Yeah, don't get crazy with it, but once you kind of get the fundamentals down, then you can kind of start pushing yourself. But you definitely want to try to get the fundamentals of just riding a dirt bike in general, you know, stopping, starting, I guess, you know, clutch control, if it has a clutch, and then balance is, of course, a huge key. But yeah, that would be the main things, is just try to get the fundamentals down of riding a dirt bike before you go trying to go ride hard enduro or whatever. But once you got to a certain point, like once you get, you know, the fundamentals of riding, then you can start pushing yourself a little bit. But you want to get the basics down first.
Cool. And then the next part is, again, we talked about it already, but a quick summary of like your advice for somebody that's new to hard enduro, not necessarily racing, but just riding that kind of terrain.
Yeah. If you have some buddies that you can find that like that, or try to get into some groups that are like hard enduro orientated, it helps a lot. It's going to help get you riding, you know, into cooler spots, and they'll show you cool things. And then you'll learn a lot more about hard enduro if you ride with hard enduro people. So if you can kind of find some people that are like-minded, that's really going to help you probably get into hard enduro more, and you'll enjoy it more. And another thing with hard enduro too, like, it seems to me, I try to tell everybody that, because a lot of people, I think, give up right quick into hard enduro because they're like, oh, this is crazy, you know, this and that. All we're doing is just shoving our bikes around. Like, we're not doing anything fun. We're not going fast. But I always try to tell everybody, the better you get, the funner it gets. So, like, it's kind of weird to say it like that, but the better, like, you get a hard enduro, like, every little thing is, like, a fun thing instead of, like, oh, that looks miserable. You, like, you see a big rock, after the better you get, it's like, oh, that looks fun, compared to when you first started, everything's just miserable. So, like, stick with it for a while. Don't just give up at first. You know, it's going to take a while to get. You're not going to be Graham Jarvis level right off the bat. So just try to, you know, stick with it and see, because the better you get, the funner it gets. I mean, like, at first you're going to hate it. You're probably not going to hardly like it. It's going to be like, what the heck? Why are we out here? Like, we could be on the trail right there. Why are we in the rocks? There's a trail right there. That's what I get from a lot of people that like don't ride much hard enduro. They're just, and I think you have to be a little bit crazy to like hard enduro too. So that's, mm-hmm. I guess we all got that in common.
Yeah, exactly.
There's usually a perfectly good trail there 20 feet away, but we're off here in the ravine or trying to go up this weird thing with a log in the middle of the hill or something. So you have to be a little bit off your rocker, I guess, to be in the hard enduro scene. And yeah, and to actually love it, you have to be a little bit of a mental side to actually love it like we do, I guess. Yeah, I mean, it has to be in you a little bit, but yeah, that would be my main advice, is just give it some time, practice, just don't just go out there and try it once and say, oh, I hate it, because I've had several guys that I ride with, and they're not hard and barrel orientated at all, they just like to go out and trail ride, but the first couple times I took them out, they were just like, oh my goodness, this is just why I'll never do this again, da 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 da, and now they ride hard enduro on a fairly decent basis, and whether they like to admit it or not, they do kind of like it now. So I mean, it just don't give up on the first ride, you know, give it some time, it'll come.
Yeah,
for sure.
I like that. All right, well then this last couple minutes that we have is for you to give any shout outs or thank yous or anything like that.
Well, I guess I want to shout out to Champion Brick for setting up my bike, and that's about the only sponsors really I got right now. So, Champion Brick and even Hocking Hills for helping me through everything, you know, and helping me get to where I'm at. Because if it wouldn't be for them guys, I wouldn't be in the hard enduro scene. So, like, I'm ungrateful to them at all. So, I definitely want to shout out to them, and yeah. The U.S. Hard Enduro, of course, for putting all the race and stuff, and hopefully they can keep growing in the, you know, United States and get bigger and everything. So yeah. Hopefully all that. I'm not real good at this kind of thing, but yeah, that's the main people I want to thank.
Awesome.
And thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm really glad that we were finally able to do this. This was really cool because we definitely got to talk in that couple hours that we sat there in the sun.
Yeah, I feel like you kind of already had my story from that point, but you didn't have it on camera, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought it was really cool. And you actually gave a lot more detail this time. So, I mean, we weren't sure before. It was like 10 minutes, we're going to be delayed another 10 minutes.
Yeah, so it was like, long story short kind of thing there, yeah.
Yeah.
So now we're kind of got to go in a little more detail about it. I mean, I probably did miss a little bit, but it's hard to sum up about the 3 years or whatever that I've been kind of in the hard enduro scene. Well, yeah, somewhat 3 years, but
this is awesome. I'm super stoked. So thank you again for your time. I know you're super busy, so I really appreciate it.
No, no problem. I'm glad to be on here. Maybe sometime again after I get better.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say, we've kind of been talking about doing updates for like racers, like every, like, you know, so often if they want to come back.
Yeah.
And give an update.
Yeah.
So for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Well, thank you again. And I guess we'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Bye.